Hello and welcome everybody to the Poker Fuse podcast. It is November 15th, 2019. This is episode 33. I'm your host, Mike Gentile, along with my co-host, Nick Jones. This week on the podcast, it's out with the old and in with the new as we revealed that after a two-year run, PokerStars is planning to remove its ambitious esports-style poker game, PowerUp. But we also uncover two new games to launch soon. Updates from the states. The U.S. Department of Justice has requested an extension to file its response to the Wire Act case, and PokerStars has revealed details of PA Coupe, its first MTT series in Pennsylvania. And finally, PokerStars is once again saying goodbye to more of its ambassadors. This time, it's Liv Bury and Igor Kurganov putting down their patches.
So it has been a 1-2 punch for exclusive news over on PokerFuse and Poker Industry Pro this week in terms of PokerStars and their novelty product launches, their kind of limited edition games. So on Tuesday this week, we reported that PowerUp, a long-standing game that they have had over 2 years now in the PokerStars client, that will be removed. We think in the next week that will be taken down from the client. But we also think it's going to be replaced fairly quickly with two new games. One called Deep Water, which I think we might have talked about on this podcast before, and another one that was all new that we haven't heard of before called Tempest.
Yeah, I remember Deep Water, the first exposure we had, the first hints that we had that that was going to be a new game coming out from PokerStars was right around April Fool's Day. I remember it was published on F5, and we weren't quite sure if they were messing with us or if it was really going to be a game. So it's been in the pipeline for quite a while, or at least we've known about it for quite a while. Do we have a sense for what Deep Water Hold'em is going to be?
Yeah, so no, not really. We have the name. We know that. So as you say, like, we first saw it back in April time. So it's been, you know, well over 6-7 months now. And yeah, we kind of thought maybe they were messing with us. And we've seen other games like be hinted at and not come to launch. We also saw last year a game called Fusion took about 6 months until it was launched. Other games leapfrogged it, but it did ultimately launch. But yeah, we saw an update to it again, in addition to an update to a game called Tempest. That's basically all we know. Like, the two games are obviously thematically linked. They both have like a kind of nautical maritime vibe to them. We have some demo screenshots, rough examples of what it think we might it might look like at the table. They have similarities to them. You know, the similar kind of color palette, the logos have some similarities. So our best guess is they might be linked in some way. Maybe they start with one game and then the other one comes along and is like a more advanced version or with a slight twist to the rules. Maybe even they both launch at the same time and they're slight twists. One is a slight twist on the other. Maybe you start on one table and you kind of progress to the second one or the game turns into the second one. But yeah, other than that, and we think maybe there are suggestions in some of the files that the game might have a variable ante, which, you know, is what it sounds like, presumably, that under some condition, there'll be antes in the game and it will change in size under some condition. Of course, Deep Water Deep would suggest potentially deep stacked play. That's about it. Everything's really guesswork from that point on.
Wow, so variable ante. Have we seen that in any other games online? I don't recall.
No, I can't really think of anything. Obviously, if it's varying, then you know, some condition's going to have to trigger so that the next hand, maybe it's, you know, the ante's larger. You might be more familiar than me, but you know, in live games, you have things like kill pots where something will trigger that it carries over to the next hand. I mean, the only other thing even like it is, you know, where the condition changes between hands is something like a mixed game, where obviously after one rotation the game goes on to something else. It's pretty rare in any poker game that the game state is different in the next hand, you know. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there. I can't think of any game that's like it. Honestly, the only thing that's we can think is something like it is in a way like the strategic impact of an anti-changing, you know, could be quite complex. If it's quite large, if the next hand all of a sudden you're playing for more money, your pre-flop ranges will change, your aggression levels should change. And that is something that we talked about when Run It Once launched Splash the Pot. That was something that, you know, when they do this pot splash, they add money to the pot. There's an additional strategic element there. Now, yeah, it might be ultimately the case that you just go all in pre-flop, but if it's just, say, an extra few big blinds, you know, you're playing a bit looser, you're contesting a pot a bit more. So there's an extra strategic depth there that potentially might carry over from Run It Once to these new games.
Yeah, there's going to be quite a shift in strategy that's going to be required if there's a wide range of how much these antes can vary. You know, going back to the kill pot thing, I guess that is a big difference because for listeners that may not be familiar, kill pots are the blinds go up if a player wins consecutive hands, for example. But that plays out differently because then to enter the pot, it costs more money even for somebody who's not in the blinds. Whereas this varying ante, yeah, I guess that is it's gonna cost more for each player to enter the pot as well. So yeah, maybe it is quite similar to kill pot strategy.
Yeah, the only other aspect there is obviously we saw with 6+ Hold'em and with PokerStars' interpretation of the game and other operators that everyone has an ante, but then there's also a live button ante. So only the button adds in an ante. So in theory, it could just be, you know, a button's live ante that's variable or only added point. Some things. You know, again, like this is purely, it's not even guesswork, it's just potential avenues this could take, but it doesn't have to be everyone's putting in more, and then ultimately that would just make it a more expensive, shallower game, wouldn't it? So maybe with Deepwater Stress Deep, maybe it starts off everyone's got 200, 300 antes or something, but under some conditions that increases, so it becomes more like a short stack game. Who knows?
Right, so with these new games, you'd said that they will probably coincide in, at least closely with the removal of power-up. We expect then these games to be temporary again, like most of the other innovative features that have come out of PokerStars?
Yeah, so that is... So we reached out to PokerStars when we got saw some hints that this might happen, and then they did confirm that these two games that they are working on, and they did say that these will be limited edition games. And then in that same conversation, they told us that power-up was going to be removed. So it seems the two are potentially linked, that the power-up will come down. That makes way some real estate, ultimately, in the poker client for a new tab to appear for these new games. So that would absolutely make sense. Did I answer your question?
You did. You know, one topic that we haven't really touched on is power-up going away. So... for those that may not be familiar, Power Up is like a hybrid game between an esports and poker, bringing those two together. It has cards that are able to change the gameplay. For example, you may be able to get to swap out one of your hole cards or switch one of the cards on the board, peek at your opponent's cards, you know, various things. And it was pretty innovative for PokerStars to launch this type of hybrid game for real money. And it had a decent run. I'm curious as to why maybe they are pulling the plug. I guess in the end it has to come down to popularity.
Yeah, ultimately I think that's it. I mean, the statement that we got from PokerStars says, hang on, let me just bring it up here. That it had a strong and loyal following, but yeah, ultimately we can surmise that, you know, it wasn't strong and loyal enough. You know, I can't think of any reason other than ultimately it did not, you know, hit the engagement levels that PokerStars expected. As you said, like, it was one of the most ambitious things an operator has done. In my mind, it's the only kind of I don't say non-poker game. It's the biggest deviation from a standard poker game, really, that we've seen for an operator to offer for real money play in regulated markets. You know, so it didn't ultimately go live in like Spain or Italy, although there was talk of it. I remember when it first came out, when we were first demoed it, they talked about how to get it regulated in Spain, they wouldn't be allowed to offer certain power cards because, you know, that wouldn't be permitted. It changes the game of poker too much, but others would be possible. So they had these plans. It's got a really good mobile client. It was, you know, the polish that they added to this, the level that they added, you know, they created a whole backstory behind the characters. You know, there was this futuristic theme, and they ultimately developed this whole new game engine that's now built into the client, that's now being used for all of their novelty or limited edition cash games.
But really, Aurora, right?
And that's what they now call Aurora, yeah. But that's really started with PowerUp to do what they wanted to do. They had to, yeah, build this new game engine, so there's a lot invested into it. And they say that, you know, a lot of that knowledge and skill is getting used now in other games, but it's certainly a shame to see its demise, I think.
Yeah, it's so. I was wondering, you know, why bother taking it down, even if it has a small following, if it's not flailing or not drawing liquidity away from other games. You know, it probably doesn't cost much for them to upkeep it. But something that I had read in one of the articles you wrote, Nick, was that it may be taking up valuable real estate space in the lobby.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they ultimately could keep. They definitely got games that, you know, I'm sure there's some limits, some game types. You know, they still have mixed rotation games and spread Badoogie and some high-low game stuff that don't get a lot of traction. But obviously they feel like that should be part of the core poker offer. I mean, PowerUp could be demoted. It doesn't have to have a big tab at the top. You know, it still has a beta tag attached to it, but you know, it could just be demoted and be kept for people to find. I'm guessing it's like a team focus thing and a product dilution decision. So, and I think it's ultimately smart. Like, yeah, the easy decision is, well, let's keep it. It's got a few players. It's a cool thing to have. But from a corporate decision, you much rather have, you know, one clear focus for your team of what you're trying to do, how you're trying to bring in players. And, you know, it's what you see out of companies like Google, for example. You know, they start loads of projects, and if it's not hitting the levels of traction they expect, they'll just cut it off, even if it's slightly profitable, even if it's got, you know, quite a big following. If it's not, you know, changing the world, then they'll stop it and make these really tough decisions. And so I think from that respect, it's quite a bold decision for PokerStars. It would be easier to just keep it around and, you know, have that offer. But I think the thing is with this game is what they realized is that it's not just going to self-promote itself, and I wonder if that's what they hoped for. Like, they would get people streaming it on Twitch, talking about it, communities would pop up, and it would advertise itself and acquire customers organically. And ultimately, I think that just hasn't happened. When it launched, it did actually, we saw a couple of strategy sites pop up, one team of Twitch streamers pop up that were ultimately acquired by PokerStars, and I think they are sticking around to help them promote some of the other games, like Deep Water, for example, that we're talking about. So it did initially get that, but it didn't snowball into something bigger. It didn't become this whole other community game. There wasn't, you know, big discussions about strategy, about the meta behind the game, or anything like that. So I think they found that it would for it to take that next step, it would require a big marketing push, which apparently they weren't willing to make. I think it was earlier this year, they added a new power card called Siphon, which I think, stop, you play the card, it steals energy from your opponents or stops them playing a card, something like that. And they did have a bit of a promotion, like a leaderboard, but it was really lightly promoted, I think. And you know, since then, I guess it's been ultimately dormant, at least from a product push perspective. So yeah, sad to see it go, but probably, you know, probably the right decision not to just leave around a lot of that kind of technical debt of games and code.
Well, we haven't seen any other operator really give something like this a try. There are other games, you know, Hold'em X came out from MediaRex a while back, and there's what's the other popular one now that is just being offered for real money?
Yeah, Hands of Victory. Oh, it's not offered for real money, but Hands of Victory has been in development for like 3 years. We have articles from 3-4 years ago, and I think it recently like officially launched in the last month. I don't think it's for real money. So, and the other ones that you listed as well are free play, like social games rather than real money games.
It'll be interesting to see if any other operator undertakes a similar initiative, you know, trying to bridge that gap between esports and poker. It seems like there is a significant amount of overlap in the types of people that play both games. And I could see that at some point, I would think that something would be able to succeed in that regard. But it's... I don't know. Power Up was pretty significant. It was pretty well thought out, as you mentioned. You know, they went through the trouble of creating this entire backstory for the game, and yet here we are, you know, years later, and the plug is being pulled. So I don't know if anybody else will venture down that road, or if perhaps something will emerge from the esports side that is more esports and implements enough poker to make it a hybrid game, but it'll be interesting to watch to see how this develops.
And I think I think the biggest thing is, you know, will we ever see something that is that crossover that's offered for real money gaming? Because when you look on the esports side, I think there would be, well, you know, what's the point? You know, so a game like Hearthstone makes just such crazy amount of money without completely avoiding regulation at all, and you know, not requiring people to cash out. People are willing to spend their money on, you know, these card packs without any expectation to, you know, with, you know, win money and make withdrawals. So PokerStars was approaching it from the mindset of, we're a real money gaming operator, that's what we do. And I think the real question is, would anyone try and undertake that and bridge those two worlds? Because I mean, absolutely, I think we could see a poker game with the trading card aspect in it, or the power card aspect in it. As you say, there's 3 or 4 on the market. I'd be very surprised if we see a real money gaming attempt again for any near time future.
Online poker in the US is in a pretty interesting position these days. So we have the new launch of online poker in Pennsylvania, but we're also facing some challenges with regard to the ongoing case of the Department of Justice trying to reinterpret the Wire Act. That particular challenge that poses is, if the DOJ is successful, then it's very possible that shared liquidity across the states in the U.S. will go away. It's even possible that the restrictions could be so intense, I guess, that in-state online poker could go away. So part of the problem that the DOJ sees is that data from online gaming can flow across state lines, which they consider to be illegal under the Wire Act. Previously, this was not thought to be a problem, and that is the reason that shared liquidity between states would be a problem. But within a particular state, it's often the case where data could be, while being routed to the routers or over the internet, could cross over state lines and back. Particularly if you're using a cell phone, you know, that data could bounce off a cell tower in a neighboring state and come back into the other state, which would then be deemed illegal under the DOJ's interpretation of the Wire Act. So that has been a case that has been ongoing in the U.S. since earlier this year. We did see New Hampshire push back and file lawsuit, and was actually successful at the district court level in getting the opinion of the DOJ set aside, at least for them. But we did see the DOJ appeal that decision, and they were scheduled to file their appellate brief this week. The original due date was the 12th of November. But they did last week get an extension on submitting that brief. So it looks like this case has been kicked down the road a bit.
Yeah, so the 11th hour, they got this extension through, as I understand it, so they've got a bit more time to ultimately file their response to this appeal decision. Do we know to when this date is, this extension date?
Yeah, the new date is in December, December 20th. So it is about 5.5 weeks beyond the original date. We actually reached out to prominent iGaming attorney Jeff Ifra. For those of you that don't know, Jeff was, I think he came to prominence right after Black Friday because he was an attorney working for, at the time, was it Poker Stars or Full Tilt? I don't even remember. But he took to the 2+2 forums to address the questions of players. So he kind of rose to prominence back in that period. So we reached out to him and we said, you know, what does this mean? Why would they be asking for this extension? And, you know, he told us that, well, it could be that they just need more time. But given that the appeal was, I think, officially filed in August, but the case itself was decided in June. So he seemed to think that that would be plenty enough time to put together a reason why they think that the decision in the district court was wrongly put forth.
Yeah, it seems strange that they have 5 months or whatever to, you know, write their response, and then, you know, they need a few weeks more to, like, you know, finally cross the T's and dot the I's. You think you would get it done in that time. So it does seem odd that it's not like they've got like a 6-month extension or something. This is just an extra few weeks to get something in.
Yeah, and to be fair to the DOJ, they do have a lot on their plate at the moment. The things that we're seeing happen politically in the U.S. are being funneled through or include the Department of Justice in some way or form. So it could be a matter of priority, absolutely. But Jeff also intimated that perhaps they weren't ready to put their official strategy into writing. Now, why that would be, I'm not completely sure. Perhaps they will be seeking some sort of settlement. That's another option of why we might see this extension going out. You know, perhaps there are talks where they could come to some sort of agreement that would perhaps not be as limiting as the opinion that they had put forth that was basically rejected by the district court. And perhaps there's going to be some compromise.
So it seems in my mind that some kind of settlement would be, could be very bad for proponents of, say, you know, online poker and shared liquidity across state lines, because we'd be looking for something in the books that's very a clear court decision, but a settlement might remove that opportunity to have, you know, absolute clarity behind their interpretation.
Right. So in that particular case, the risk is that a new administration comes in and decides not to honor this deal or to take a different opinion on the Wire Act that is, again, more restrictive. And here we are back at the at square one again. So that definitely would be a downside. You know, one of the plus sides, though, could be that perhaps this settlement includes the DOJ focusing its enforcement efforts on offshore online operators, which could, you know, benefit the legal regulated operators in the states.
Yeah. Meanwhile, whilst this is all going on and seeking, you know, some clarity, and again, hopefully by the end of this year, there'll be something a bit clearer.
Well, don't expect it by the end of this year. So their brief is due toward the end of the year. But then there's an additional probably 30 days or so before the other side needs to file their paperwork. I don't expect to see a decision in this case before perhaps like mid to late February. And that would be the earliest. And it could stretch on a lot longer.
But that's under the assumption that they do ultimately file something in this time period. If, for example, there's actually a settlement discussions going on behind closed doors, or they make the decision to you know, not file that appeal, then it could all be resolved by the end of the year. No, like if they choose not to file anything by the time their extension's up.
True, true. So yeah, there definitely could be a settlement prior to that, and they could abandon this pursuit altogether. Both of those are possible. Yeah, and both of those, yes, would resolve the issue in some form until the end of the year. As you pointed out, it's for online operators. They would love to have this case law decided. And while the New Hampshire case did do that in part, there are some limitations to the decision rendered by the court that leave open some risks for the online gaming industry.
Can you get into some of those risks?
Well, so I believe, and I'd have to look back at the decision, but I believe that there were some limitations in the original court case that said that this was not applicable to other states, for example. So this may only have been applicable to the state of New Hampshire.
And, oh, that's right, yeah.
I remember at the time we were thinking, wow, why hasn't WSOP Snap filed their own lawsuit to be able to get this applicable to the states in which they operate, or to perhaps get it a more broader decision. But I do think that there are limitations as far as precedent goes with the New Hampshire case.
Yeah. And so anyway, so meanwhile, you know, states like Pennsylvania, which we talked about last week, now has its first regulated online poker room with PokerStars that launched last Monday for a soft launch period. We expect that to stay segregated and for Pennsylvania not really to pursue any opportunities under the multi-state agreement of shared liquidity until this is resolved. So yeah. PokerStars is going it alone. And Mike, what can you tell us about, you know, a week on now since launch, how things are going?
Well, yeah, as you said, we don't expect shared liquidity to come to Pennsylvania. It's the regulator has thus far taken a very conservative approach to this new DOJ reinterpretation of the Wire Act. Before launch, if you recall, they did want to make sure that even though this was still in the process and there were lawsuits fighting against this opinion, that their operators were abiding by the strictest interpretation of that Wire Act. So they gave operators extra time to relocate their servers or infrastructure within the state of Pennsylvania if needed, because originally the regulations allowed for servers and such to be located in other areas, in other states, in other locations beside Pennsylvania. So the DOJ reinterpretation definitely hit home with the Pennsylvania regulator, and we've seen them move forward very cautiously. So yeah, I don't expect that there's going to be any shared liquidity until there's a pretty significant resolution to this Wire Act case. As far as online poker in Pennsylvania, in the first week, it's been pretty successful from all measurements that we can see. During the soft launch, the number of butts in seats, for example, exceeded what we saw in New Jersey. It was pretty well received by players all around. Traffic seems to be cash game traffic that we have on Poker Industry Pro seems to be telling us that the state of Pennsylvania is ranking quite well in regard to their relation of other rooms. Yeah,
I think we touched on it last week, and they have managed to sustain the kind of levels that they were soon after launch, which is, you know, PokerStars in Pennsylvania in terms of cash game traffic is larger than all the other operators combined. So, you know, the WSOP's Tri-State Network, PokerStars' own site in New Jersey, and the Party Poker Borgata, all those combined is significantly smaller than just PokerStars in Pennsylvania. And it's, in fact, larger than any regulated US operator at any point in their history. I don't think any site has sustained anything close, really, to 400 concurrent players round the clock. So from that level, being that they're only just starting to ramp up marketing, it's... Yeah, so I mean, there was clear, you know, a lot of pent up demand there that was, you know, released within hours of it coming online.
Yeah, and so it's definitely been successful. And just moments before we started recording this podcast, we also published an article on PokerFuse that PokerStars has announced the first ever PA coup.
That was going to be my first question. Are we going PA coup or pack coup?
Yeah, it's got to be PA coup. No, I mean the other one just sounds. Yeah, PA coupe to me rolls off the tongue, but yeah, I did have a question about that, and I have not heard anyone from PokerStars actually say it, so that's just my guess that we're going to be going with PA coupe.
Okay, so what are the headline figures for the first schedule for Pennsylvania's first ever regulated online tournament series?
Yeah, so there's going to be 50 events. The series runs from November 30th through December 16th. Buy-ins range from $30 to $750, and the main event will take place on December 15th and will feature a $100,000 guaranteed prize pool for a buy-in of $300.
Okay, and what's what prize pool are we looking at across the whole series, across all 50 events?
It is a $1 million guaranteed across all events, which... to be quite honest, it is a bit surprising given the success that we've talked about. All of these numbers are lower than what we saw PokerStars put on for their first tournament series in New Jersey. I fully expected there to be at least a $1.5 million guarantee. In New Jersey back in 2016, they ran 54 tournaments, I believe it was, in their inaugural series, with a total of $1.1 million in guaranteed prize money spread across all of those events. And just, you know, given the success that we've seen in the opening of or the launch of PokerStars Pennsylvania, coupled with other factors such as the state itself has about 30% more population than New Jersey, so you have a bigger potential player pool there. The time of year that it's running. So in New Jersey, when they launched, the first series that they held ran in May, which is traditionally a slower time of the year for online poker. And this one is running right smack dab in the middle of the holiday season, which is traditionally a high time for online poker. It's surprising that they weren't more aggressive with their push for this series. I was a bit surprised, to be quite honest.
Well, two thoughts to that. One would be, is there much difference in lead time between launching and their first series? So obviously they're running PA Coupe, you said, at the end of this month, so 3 weeks after going live. Was there more of a gap? Like, did they have a good couple of months lead time between like the first NJ Coupe and them launching? So I just wonder whether they're, you know, they just feel like they haven't built up the player base yet.
Yeah, so there was a bit more time. I'm not sure how significant it was. Perhaps easier to get players in via satellites and such. But if I recall, I think that PokerStars launched actually mid-March, mid to late March, and NJ Coupe was held in May. I don't remember the exact date that it was held. So it seems like there may have been a little bit more lead time in New Jersey. But I don't know. Maybe that is a factor that I'm just overlooking.
I think another thing is maybe they've just learned from NJ Coop, and they've learned from what they do in the .com markets, which is, you know, they try and grow W Coop and Scoop every single time by an amount, you know, it goes up $5 or $10 million and has done for the last 3 or 4 years between W Coop and Scoop, where in NJ Coop, yeah, they came in at the $1 million level because that's where everyone else was, you know. Well, it was Party Poker Borgata at the time that had their Garden State Super Series that really grabbed the headlines. And it sat there, right? It sat at the $1 million level. They can't go higher without, you know, seeing a lot of overlays. So maybe they're coming at that so they can, you know, talk about how everything, you know, smash their guarantees, and then we're going to have a Scoop equivalent in 6 months' time, and then it's 1.2, and then it's 1.4, and they've got, you know, they're building in a couple of years of being able to talk about the largest ever, and it just gives them slightly better headlines.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that they need to be careful. You know, we've talked on this podcast many times about the escalating guarantees in these tournament series, and perhaps that's something that they had in mind. I know that New Jersey is probably, correct me if I'm wrong, but it may be the only market where they've seen a decline in their guarantees for their tournament series. They actually peaked at $1.3 million, which was guaranteed in April 2018 for NJ Scoop. And then, you know, we saw the next iteration of NJ Coop with its guarantee being dropped to $1 million. That was just took place last month. So it's quite possible that they looked at that and are taking this conservative approach in order to not get too far out in front of themselves and to build themselves more room to grow over the coming series. We learned this week that PokerStars ambassadors Liv Bree and Igor Kurganov will no longer be representing PokerStars. It was something that, I don't know, maybe was expected given the trajectory of ambassadors for PokerStars over the past year or so. The story that we have was posted on Poker Industry Pro and written by our own Samantha Bevington, who's with us today to talk about the news and what we see as the landscape around poker ambassadors. Welcome, Sam. Glad to have you. How did we hear about this news?
Hi, Yael. Nice to be here again. So we heard about it because they posted on Twitter on their independent accounts, but around about the same time of day, a couple of days ago, they announced that they would be leaving, which hasn't shocked us internally. I think we've been expecting it for a couple of years because it seems like there's a lot of changes at PokerStars, which started a couple of years ago with a lot of high profile names leaving. And it does feel that this was the natural progression of that.
Yeah. So, looking through your article, there's quite a backstory here. Tell us a bit about some of the high profile ambassadors that have parted ways with PokerStars recently.
Well, casting our mind back to 2018, there was a flurry of announcements. Basically, you had Jason Mercier. I'm sorry if I said that wrong, his surname, but Mercier?
Yeah, I'm never quite sure which one it is either. I think both are acceptable, so I think you're
cool. We'll just go with, you know who I mean. Yeah. Vanessa Selk, Felipe Ramos and Elke, they all left within the same month, all citing different reasons at the time. Elke said that he felt that Team Pro was going in a different direction than he really wanted. Jason was starting his family. I think Vanessa got a corporate job in New York. So there were a lot of different reasons behind it.
And these were primarily long-standing ambassadors, correct?
Yeah, big time. I mean, Elke had been there best part of a decade. I think even Jason and Vanessa, yeah, really long-standing pros. And it's like with Liv, I mean, she's been there 9 years, which is a really long time. Igor Less, he's been with Party Poker 3 years, which at the time came as a bit of a shock because he had always been such a critic of PokerStars in the past. Igor had been a critic of PokerStars in the past, so it was always really surprising that he signed.
I thought you said Igor had been with Party Poker that amount of time. I was wondering if you were foreshadowing perhaps what his future plans might be.
Well, you never know. They do like their high profile, their high stakes poker players because they've got Fedor Holtz, they've got Ike Haxton on the books over at Party Poker. So you never know. I wouldn't that would surprise me less if Eagle went there, but I don't think Liv will. It does seem that she does want to go into the more presenting route, the science, the TED Talks that she's been doing. I mean, that would surprise me a lot if she then turned around and signed with Party, for sure.
Yeah, well, you never know. They have been quite aggressive in their pursuit of former Poker Stars ambassadors. They signed a whole bunch, didn't they? When was that? So we saw like Jamie Staples and Jeff Gross. When did that all happen? I don't even remember.
So that all happened this year.
That was this year. Okay.
That was this year. So that was almost like the second wave, if you will, of people leaving PokerStars and then signing to Party. So you had Jamie and Jeff, I think maybe even on the same day that they announced, or it was within days of each other, they announced that they were leaving PokerStars, but didn't say where they were going. And then ultimately they signed with Party Poker. Yeah, then Kevin Martin, he didn't renew his contract. He has signed with Party Poker. So we've seen a lot of people go over to Party Poker, and even Elky, he now is heading up the partypoker.eu site as the face of the ring-fenced shared liquidity market in Southern Europe.
Yeah, so there's been quite an exodus. I think it reflects a change in perhaps priority or strategy on the part of PokerStars. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't also mention the 2019 World Series of Poker Player of the... well, former 2019 World Series of Poker Player of the Year, Daniel Negreanu, who was the... he was the highest profile ambassador on the PokerStars roster.
Yeah, for sure. And he said in May that he wasn't going to be renewing his contract with PokerStars. I mean, it's quite a lot of timeline to get your head round. And I mean, that's all outlined in the article, so go and read that if you're listening. But yeah, I mean, that must have come as a blow to PokerStars, because Daniel has got such a reach and he's got such an audience and he is synonymous with the brand. So having to part ways with him after such a long time, because I think that had been 12 years that they had been working together, you know, is a huge change for the roster.
So who does that leave in terms of high profile ambassadors?
Yeah. It leaves, so Chris Moneymaker is still there, and he's still a really prominent figure because he's running his Moneymaker Road to the PSPC, which right. is part of the, you know, the Platinum Pass giveaway, and that's a global tour that he's heading up. And you've got Andre Akari, and again, I'm really sorry if I'm not pronouncing these names right. But he's still there. Oh, thanks, Mike. And we've got Jason Somerville, and we've got Jennifer Shahadi, who now she's going to be the face of PokerStars Pennsylvania. So they've still got people or poker players that we know of that are still there. It's just not what it was.
Yeah. So, Chris Moneymaker is probably now the highest profile name that they have on the roster, and you know, given that he is credited with the revitalization of poker, not only in the U.S. but around the world, it would be surprising to see them part ways with Chris. His story actually weaves well into the PokerStars narrative of, you know, win a PokerStars tournament, become, you know, one of the biggest poker names in the world. So it seems like he fits. He's a good fit for them. And like you said, he is being utilized quite a bit in the marketing of the PSPC this year. So it would be surprising for them to part ways with Chris. And then I think the other one that really stands out to me is Jason Somerville. He is, And I was going to say he's the biggest name in online poker streaming, but perhaps he isn't even anymore. You know, he is the godfather of online poker streaming. Mm. We could say that for sure. He's got his fingers in a whole lot of pies. He's, you know, out there training and prepping a whole new generation of online poker streamers. He's a very well-spoken, good ambassador. Again, I because of their close business ties with Jason, I would be surprised to see them let him go. And then perhaps one of the names that we didn't mention is Lex Velhaus. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, by the way, Sam. But he's also got a pretty strong reach. And him as well, I would be surprised if he's going to be parting ways with PokerStars anytime in the near future.
I'd agree. Just to one of your points about how Moneymaker fits into the narrative of what PokerStars are trying to do with the PSPC, I think we've also seen that with a few of the new additions that they've signed to their sponsored pros. You've got a few people who won platinum passes that they have signed as sponsored pro. So you've got Kalido So and you've got Ali Shaban, who they have signed up. But then you've also got the bigger name, which is Ramon Colilas.
I'm glad you had that one and not me.
I'm sure Nick's got something to say about that pronunciation. But yeah, so he was the platinum pass winner last year. He was the rags to riches story because he won a platinum pass into the PSPC and then he won the whole tournament. So that's like another moneymaker.
Right.
So it all kind of fits into, that seems to be the path that they're focusing on now. The rags to riches, the everyman kind of story, rather than maybe the high stakes elite prestige players.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. So it's interesting to watch from the sidelines as we see this transformation happen. I would ask you to predict who might be the next sponsored pro, but given that we just talked about, you know, how they're choosing just regular people that are able to rise up through poker, it's probably impossible to predict because, you know, it could be the next nobody that wins a big tournament and something that changes their life, and PokerStars wants to tell their story.
And I feel even Maria Konnikova, she, although she's not a nobody by any means, and she has her own career as a journalist and acclaimed writer, her poker story, on the other hand, is almost rags to riches in the sense that she had no real experience, has been learning the game, and actually has been really good at it, and they've signed her as well. So that again fits into this overarching feeling of, you know, practice, anyone could be good at poker, you need to try, and this could be you.
Yeah, so Maria definitely has characteristics that coincide and align with that narrative for sure. She did have one little advantage that other people might not have, and that was, do you know what that was, Sam?
I think it was that she got some tutorage from Barry Greenstein? No, Seidel!
Eric Seidel, So that's not exactly available to the everyman.
That's true. Okay, we'll put an asterisk by her name.
right. She got in there and performed. You can get all the training in the world you want, but unless you're able to execute on that training, then it's really not going to be helpful. And she was. She's been successful in her career. She had a victory down in the Bahamas. I forget that wasn't this year. No,
that was the PCA 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. So she's done well. She took the opportunity that she had and she made the best of it. So kudos to Maria.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
And I think her book's coming out soon. I think I saw that on Twitter that she's finished the manuscript, which talks about her her story. and her training with Eric.
It'd be
Eric.
Very interesting to read that. Interesting
yeah,
to read that
yeah,
for sure.
Definitely.
Okay, well, stay tuned for more to come as perhaps some new players win platinum passes to the PSPC, and who knows, maybe even get signed to PokerStars to be their next rag-to-riches ambassador.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the PokerFuse podcast. As a reminder, please give us a like and a subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also follow us and interact with us on Twitter. Nick is at PokerProJones. I'm at SpookyBugs. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.